This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. The governor says to stay at home, but I'm here at work, along with our technical director and a handful of others. I saw plenty of cars on my way in, certainly not nearly as many as I do under normal circumstances, but enough to make me wonder, what does this mean? Who does this apply to? And what, if any, are the consequences of not staying at home? Throughout today's show, we'll be sharing questions from you, many of them sent through an online form that you can find on Indiana Public Broadcasting's news stories. And you can participate in the conversation if you're listening live through our Facebook and Twitter feeds at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We've gotten a lot of questions from our audience about the coronavirus pandemic and the rapidly changing news around it. It can be difficult to find accurate information on issues like this, but it's crucial. If we share a question on today's show and we can't give you an answer, we'll do our best to point you towards the place where you can find it. Joining me now are two people that have spent a lot of time, as many have, learning and reporting about all of this. Lauren Chapman is our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Thanks for coming in, Lauren.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And we're joined via Skype by the State House reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting, Brandon Smith. Thanks, Brandon.
Always happy to be here.
Over the phone, we have Tom Dzinski, Director of Epidemiology Education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. Tom, we really appreciate you joining us again.
Thanks for the opportunity.
What did Governor Holcomb announce on Monday, Brandon?
The governor followed the lead of most of the surrounding governors in states surrounding Indiana in issuing what's called a stay-at-home order. What that means is for the next 2 weeks through April 6th, he wants people who are not doing essential businesses or accessing essential services to stay at home. I mean, it's pretty simple. Don't go out if you don't have to. Now, there are, as you kind of mentioned, alluded to at the top, a lot of exceptions to this, both on a professional and a personal level. For example, you can go out and take a walk if you're observing that 6-foot CDC social distancing guideline. You can obviously go to the grocery store when you need to, though, as the governor said, only go to the grocery store when you need to and only get as much as you need, because we, of course, have heard the problems that people have encountered trying to access a lot of basic goods. Toilet paper being perhaps the most notable example, but there's been a lot of problems with supply chains, both in Indiana and across the country. So, again, stay at home as much as you can, though there are a lot of exceptions to that.
Yeah. Lauren, what is the difference between stay at home and shelter in place, which is what some other states have instituted? Is there a difference that we can really define?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, no, there's not really a difference. Hmm. It's just the difference in the phrase. But otherwise, you know, it's coming down to the bare minimum of stay out of large crowds, stay out of any sort of crowd, and, you know, help prevent the spread of this virus any more than it already has.
Tom, how important is an order like this? How much of a difference can it make at the point we're at?
I think it can make a big difference if we're actually doing it, right? If we maintain that 6-foot separation and we can do this long enough, we could actually slow the spread of this disease and in some cases prevent people from becoming ill and, you know, subsequently then prevent people from having severe outcomes, you know, such as being hospitalized, put on a ventilator, or even dying from this disease. So I think if done properly and done long enough, this has saved lives.
We're going to try to address the audio issue on Tom's line. We can hear you, Tom, but there is some interference. Lauren, what are the latest numbers in Indiana, numbers of cases and deaths?
I'm so glad you asked, mostly because I just pulled it up. As of 10 a.m. this morning, we have had 645 confirmed positive cases in the state of Indiana, including a few additional deaths, bringing our total up to 17. Mm. But the important number to note is the number of folks that have been tested, and that number has jumped up to 4,651. So yesterday we were in the 3,000 area, so we're ramping up testing across the state and getting that through ISDH.
And that is why the number is going up. It's because the positives are coming through from the testing, which is becoming more readily available.
Exactly. A lot of people are getting tested. A lot of people are, according to State Health Commissioner Chris Box, about 13% of folks who are tested for COVID-19 are coming out positive, which means with that increase in tests, we're able to find more people, isolate people, and, you know, address their health concerns while protecting folks who already don't have COVID-19.
Tom, we've gotten a lot of questions from our audience about symptoms that they're having, asking whether or not they should be tested for COVID-19. What would you say to those people who are wondering, because the tests are finite?
Tests are finite, and no test is 100% accurate 100% of the time. And it just depends at what stage of the infection you're in as well. So if you're having symptoms of fever, cough, shortness of breath, call your doctor. Don't wait. You know, don't necessarily have to go running there if you're not in distress, but call your doctor first. I see that even like there's places now that you could do a virtual visit, which is great. Obviously, if you're in respiratory distress, you need to get to the emergency room.
We are on the phone with Tom Dzinski, Director of Epidemiology Education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. We also have Indiana Public Broadcasting digital producer Lauren Chapman with us and State House reporter Brandon Smith with us to answer questions about the stay-at-home order that came down on Monday and went into effect yesterday. And we are going to go to the questions that we've gleaned from our website and from the comment section. And, of course, if you want to jump into the conversation, you can do so by hitting up our social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, and we'll do our best to get your voicemail in front of the panel today. Again, 866-476-3881. Here's the first question. Can we see a map of the coronavirus cases in Johnson County so we know how close it is to us? Lauren?
Yeah, so here's the problem that we run into with more specific data. So the State Department of Health has a map that breaks it out by county. But for individual counties, you run into the problem of privacy protection from the State Department of Health. So the reason why we don't know exact locations of where people live or where this outbreak, you know, is in a particular county is because we're trying to protect the privacy of individuals. And so we're not the media. Us are not given that information because it's protected by the State Department of Health and local county health departments.
Tom, we have another question here. This one's going to go to you. When is it okay to go outside? Is there a certain time? What if I get really sick or something serious happens? What do I do? What if one of my family members gets sick severely but doesn't have COVID-19? Will there still be medical help?
Yeah, you can go outside as long as you're healthy and feeling fine. But I think at the beginning of the show, you mentioned maintaining that 6-foot separation between you and other people that aren't in your immediate household. If somebody in your household becomes ill, again, contact the physician. If you could isolate them like in their own bedroom and take care of them that way, minimizing the amount of contacts or surfaces they're coming in contact with and spreading possibly the virus, that would be really, really great. It's also easier to clean one room as it opposed to the entire whole house, right?
I have another question along those lines from another listener who says, I have a bad heart. The worst thing I can do is sit at home. I need to walk to try to keep what's left of my heart strong. I can't stay at home. So you're saying, Tom, that it's okay to go outside. And indeed, I've seen quite a few people walking outside.
Yeah. I'm going for a walk today myself. So the thing is, somebody with cardiovascular disease or, you know, heart problems, they have to be really careful about not getting infected. This particular virus, the older you get, the put you at more severe risk for a severe outcome. then you add what we call comorbid conditions or other illnesses that you already have on top of that and put you at greater risk. So, yes, if you have to walk, make sure you're maintaining that safe distance from other people. Wash your hands. Try not to touch your face. The things that we've been talking about for some time.
Sounds like that listener may want to exercise extra caution. Of course, by all means, get your exercise in. But I would certainly not want that person to come down with COVID-19. Another question here. What are the restrictions of traveling from our winter home in Central Florida to our summer home in Central Indiana? Lauren, do we know of any travel restrictions that are in place that are being enforced?
Not to my knowledge. There aren't specific travel advisories. Some of the counties have thrown out the idea of, you know, limiting travel, but it's more in line with stay-at-home measures as opposed to actually not being able to go or to return to a place. So, for example, one of the cases out of COVID-19 out of Tippecanoe County was a Purdue student that had traveled home back to a different county in the state. And so that's an example of you're allowed to go home, go to your summer home. Just make sure that you're observing those CDC guidelines of 6 feet of distance, not going out in crowds, et cetera.
Not too many stops along the way.
Yeah.
Maybe just for gas. and we have another listener question here in our last minute. I think this is great, but I'm on oxygen and cannot get out to get any sanitizer. Is there any way I can get a bottle mailed to me? Lauren?
Yes, absolutely. Any of the places that you can purchase supplies online is where you're going to be able to get it. I know that there's a lot of price inflation. My grandparents have had the same issue of trying to get certain supplies and having the prices inflated. But if you're able to hold out until those prices go down or wait a little bit, you can absolutely have all of your regular deliveries.
I have another question here. It says, I'm a 68-year-old woman with controlled hypertension and a recent bout of both influenza and acute bronchitis. I live with family members. One is working from home. The other is working construction. One wants to take a walk with two friends while practicing social distancing. Thoughts? Tom, would you be okay with that kind of a practice in about 10 seconds?
No, not specifically, especially if she has those conditions that put her at greater risk.
We're on with Tom Dusinski. He is Director of Epidemiology Education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. Lauren Chapman, our digital producer from Indiana Public Broadcasting, is also with us. And Brandon Smith, our State House reporter. When we come back, we'll answer more of your questions about the governor's stay-at-home order. I'm Matt Pelzer. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're talking about the governor's stay-at-home order, which he announced on Monday and which went into effect at midnight yesterday. So we're in day two of the stay-at-home order. And we are with a panel of experts to unpack what that means. I have Lauren Chapman here from our digital team at Indiana Public Broadcasting. We also have Brandon Smith, our State House reporter, to answer some of the questions on the statewide level and regarding some of the legal implications and from the governor's announcement. We also have Tom Dusinski from the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI on with us, and we are answering your questions gleaned from our Indiana Public Broadcasting websites, and we will take your questions from our Facebook and Twitter feeds as well. You can find us online at All in Indiana, and you can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. Lauren, I have a question here. Is there a list of essential and non-essential businesses for Marion County?
No. So there is a list that kind of breaks down exactly what qualifies as an essential business, which you can find and if you look for our story on any of our Indiana Public Broadcasting stations, Can I Go for a Walk? Here's what stay-at-home order really means. yesterday, I actually went through the governor's executive order, went through some of the places that he referenced in that executive order, and provided a bit more of a comprehensive breakdown as to what qualifies as an essential business, which includes more than just, you know, hospitals, grocery stores, et cetera, because it also includes the that kind of like outer ring of businesses that help keep those businesses going. So, for example, someone had asked me if a business that is specifically designed to make frames for semi-trucks, if that is still an essential business. And technically, according to the guidelines from the Department of Homeland Security and from the governor, yeah, that would qualify because we need semi-trucks to continue to operate, to deliver supplies, to continue the chain going, and to assist hospitals and grocery stores and everybody else that's still open. So that net gets cast fairly wide.
Brandon Smith, the governor mentioned takeout in his address on Monday. Are we still allowed to get takeout under this, or are we being discouraged from things like that?
No, that is something that the governor is urging people to still do when possible. That actually goes back a little further. Before the stay-at-home order was issued this week, the governor the week before had ordered all bars and restaurants to stop allowing in-person dining and shift to a takeout or delivery model only. When he made the stay-at-home order, he kind of emphasized that again, that restaurants and bars can still stay open, including for alcohol delivery and takeout, but it is delivery and takeout only. And for any bars and restaurants who were still allowing in-person dining, he was going to start directing the state's Alcohol and Tobacco Commission to pull their licenses, their food and beverage licenses, because he felt that was really important to start cracking down on those folks who for more than a week had been violating a previous order. So no, if you have local businesses who are still doing takeout or delivery, Governor Holcomb encourages you to continue patronizing those businesses to help them, in a lot of cases, stay afloat. A lot of those restaurants have gone to, if you do takeout, have gone to a sort of curbside pickup model where you don't actually have to go into the place and interact with people on a more close basis, because that would obviously violate the social distancing guidelines.
And I had a great conversation with a local executive chef that we're going to air on the show tomorrow, talking about how one local restaurant is dealing with this big change and just how much takeout they're handling right now. And of course, it varies from place to place. We have a listener voicemail from Alex in Indianapolis. He's concerned about some people not taking the stay-at-home order seriously enough. Let's listen.
Hey, this is Alex in Indianapolis. I'm hoping to get some guidance on talking to a couple friends of ours. They seem to think that it's not seriously, and one serious, and one has even said that they are going out daily to the grocery store just because they're bored. And, I mean, what would you guys say to try to import onto these people the significance and how important it is to shelter in place or stay at home, as we've been told? Thanks.
Tom, that sounds like one for you. How serious is this, and what would you say to those people?
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge, and I've been talking to a lot of people about this, including friends and family, about the importance of keeping the distance. I know that people get bored at home and such, but for most people, this is going to be a very mild disease, right? The challenge, though, is for those that they may expose, that it won't be a mild disease. The older populations or those with pre-existing conditions, that's where the real danger becomes. What I'm telling my own family, what I'm telling my own friends is, look, the chances are all of you are going to be just fine, even if you get this disease. But what we don't want is to expose grandma and grandpa and the other folks that are older that could have more severe outcomes. So encourage them as much as you can just to stay at home. Yes, going to the grocery store, I tell my family and friends, don't take everybody to the store. Send one person to the store. Limit the amount of exposure that could potentially happen.
Tom, one thing that I've seen that I think is important to reiterate is that the idea of a shelter in place or a stay at home is that after the fact, or not the idea, but I guess an effect of it is that after the fact, it's going to seem like it was all for nothing. And that is if it works. Is that how you would characterize it?
Absolutely, right? I mean, this whole idea is if we all just kind of shelter in place, the virus has no place to go, right? I mean, it ends. And then it'll be like, well, why did we do this? There was nothing bad that happened. And that's exactly what we want to happen. Unfortunately, we know the virus is here and there is community spread. I think your earlier question about why don't we see exactly which neighborhood these cases are in, my answer would be it doesn't matter. It's here. It's in. You have to consider it being in every neighborhood already. So that's why the shelter in place is so important.
Tom, I have another one here for you that I've wondered about myself. This is from a listener who asks, are there any side effects after recovery from the virus? How long before back to normal? Are you left weak and tired after? And if so, for how long?
Yeah, I've been looking at some of the literature on this, and it's coming from other countries because we don't have a lot of recovery cases yet in the U.S. There are some, but we know that people are going to feel ill, maybe as long as 7 days in some cases, usually shorter, especially if the younger population. There haven't been any reports of long-term side effects of this. Much like I said, if it's a mild disease in you and you're young enough and you have a robust immune system, it'll be like when you get a cold and you get better. So there isn't a whole lot of literature around any long-term side effects of this disease.
Brandon, I have one for you here. Does Indiana have any plans to provide relief to workers during this crisis? The recent act that expanded FMLA to workers who have children out of school due to the virus has excluded employees who work for employers with over 500 people. This puts my husband and myself in a tough spot because we both work for large corporations that do not provide much sick leave, and our kids are out of school at least through May. Have you heard any plans to expand this act to include large employers as well? Brandon?
I haven't heard about that specific issue. I know that earlier this week, the state superintendent of public instruction, Jennifer McCormick, talked about how childcare is one of the top priorities they are trying to address right now and what that looks like. So what they're doing at the moment, they tell us, is they're trying to gather information. What childcare resources exist in the state? Where are the areas that are in the most direct need? And then prioritizing those resources for actually healthcare workers, first responders, those who are on the so-called front lines of this COVID-19 pandemic response. In terms of expanding FMLA, I haven't heard anything about that. There's a lot of push and pull here on this issue and a lot of others between the state and the federal government. There are some things the state can do. There are other things the federal government can do. And a lot of those are tied into dollars. The state can't put together the kind of aid package where they're sending money directly to people the way that the federal government can, literally, because the state can't take on debt that way, the way the federal government can. So you're not going to see any trillion-dollar aid packages from the state of Indiana. You're going to see that from the federal government. But the problem is a lot of this stuff is just constantly in flux. So my answer on Monday will change to my answer on Wednesday, which will change to my answer on Friday, and then in the weeks to come.
We're unpacking Governor Holcomb's stay-at-home order, which came down as an announcement on Monday and went into effect yesterday. We are on with State House reporter Brandon Smith, who we just heard. We also have Lauren Chapman, Indiana Public Broadcasting digital producer in the room, and Tom Dasinski, professor of epidemiology with the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. And we have another listener voicemail. This one is from Rosemary in Indianapolis, who just returned home from vacation. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Rosemary, and I'm calling from Indianapolis. Last Friday, I arrived home from a two-week visit in Hawaii. I have put myself on a self-induced quarantine for 14 days. What do I do after that? Is it okay for me to go to the store? Do I just follow the stay-at-home policy if it's still in existence? A little advice would be great. Thanks.
Tom, I just talked to a good friend of mine who's doing the exact same thing. What do we say?
Well, if she's not sick, that's good news. If the stay-at-home order is still in place, she should follow that. I mean, it's fairly straightforward. If she becomes ill, obviously contact a physician right away, call them, and get their advice in terms of testing or other support.
Tom, I have one here for you, and I've wondered about this myself. If I have to order products online from, say, Amazon, is that safe? My mom needs new shoes at her skilled nursing facility. I can only find antibacterial soap online. Are the products that arrive possibly contaminated to the touch? Do I need to spray everything down with Lysol?
No, you don't need to spray everything down with Lysol. There has been some studies that show this virus can live on different surfaces under certain conditions. And those conditions vary depending on the surface and how long they're out in the environment. So the best advice would be, take the products in, unpackage them carefully, washing your hands after unpackaging everything, and then dispose of, you know, the boxes.
I have a question. I'm not sure who to give it to, whether it's Brandon or Lauren. I think I'm going to give it to Brandon. And that is this one. And it comes from a listener who says, unemployment rules demand that you look for a job. How are we going to qualify for unemployment if we can't go out and look for a job?
You don't have to. That was something that the governor did, I think, a couple weeks ago now, although I've lost all sense of time and space.
You're not the only one.
But no, that was one of the steps the governor took pretty early on in this, as they foresaw a huge jump in unemployment that obviously we have seen now. No, you do not have to be looking for a job to access those benefits.
Lauren, I think it's important to reiterate this. We have another question that says, how do I find out how many confirmed cases are in the county I live in?
Yeah, so I've got a map that I'm updating every single morning along with the Indiana State Department of Health, but always go instead to the State Department of Health, which is at coronavirus.in.gov. They will have the most accurate information, updated numbers, et cetera. So that's where you want to go to find out all of that information.
And we really appreciate all the work that you're doing. I know some people are out of work, but you're putting in quite a bit of work. How many hours did you work last week?
No, it was the week before.
The week before?
That was a 90-hour week.
Oh, my goodness.
And wow. It's fine. You know, it's a global pandemic. It's fine.
We have another question here from a listener. Why aren't all non-essential businesses actually shutting down? I think this stay-at-home, stay-in-place order, as they put it in their question, is really just to try to give the public a sense of security, albeit a false one, they say. My fiancé works for a manufacturing company making fiberglass parts for GM and others. He's non-union and not a GM employee. This is utterly non-essential. His life is at risk by being there. This is ludicrous, they go on to say. When will this type of business be shut down? Brandon, do we have any sense for an answer to that?
That's been perhaps one of the most outstanding unanswered questions from the Holcomb administration, exactly how this order is going to be enforced. Now, what the governor has said is that in situations like the one she just described, or that listener just described, first things first, They are encouraging employees to talk to their employers, to go to their boss and say, I'm looking at the guidance. I don't think we're essential. Why are you forcing me to come in and to find out more information? But the governor then says, in lieu of that, if you have that conversation, your boss won't budge, your company won't budge, they're going to stay open, they're ordering you to come in, you should file a complaint with the Indiana Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or IOSHA. Holcomb keeps impressing upon people, well, first talk with your employer. But obviously, as we all know, for a lot of people, if your boss is forcing you to come in, that's probably not going to work very well. So they want you to talk to IOSHA, and you can call and make that complaint at 317-232-2693. Once again, IOSHA is at 317-232-2693. Or you can send them an email at OSHA complaint, OSHA complaint, at dol.in.gov. As for how it will be resolved at that point, we quite frankly don't know yet. But the governor is saying, we want to know about companies that aren't following this order.
Tom, I'm going to shoot this one to you. This listener says, don't need any information. I have not and will not change my lifestyle. I don't take orders from governors. I am not stupid. I keep myself away from things, but if I need to go out, I do. This is way overblown. I mean, I've heard these sorts of things before, Tom, but what's your response as an epidemiologist?
This is not overblown. You know, this is really what public health is about and how we can protect the most vulnerable populations. I understand that, you know, this is America and this is the mindset of some individuals, but public health and the governor and State Department of Health, they're all doing things to protect the public's health because we know this is a dangerous disease. We know that it is infectious. We know that people, unfortunately, are going to be hospitalized and some are going to die. So we're trying to do everything we can to prevent that because it's person to person, right? And we have to separate people if we're going to stop the transmission.
And, you know, it's also important to note that last Friday was the third death that was announced in the state. As of this morning, we are up to 17. So if not for yourself, do it for your community. Do it for people who have compromised immune systems. Do it for people who are older.
We are talking about the governor's stay-at-home order, which came down on Monday and which went into effect on Wednesday. What does it mean? We're on the phone with Brandon Smith, our State House reporter. We also have Lauren Chapman, who is our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting, and Tom Dzinski, director of epidemiology at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. And we will be back with more of your questions next. I'm Matt Pelser. That's in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. On Monday, Governor Holcomb sent down the stay-at-home order, which went into effect on Wednesday. So this is day two, and some people still don't quite know what it means, myself included. And we are on the line with some experts who can help us out with that. We have our digital producer, Lauren Chapman from Indiana Public Broadcasting, who has been curating all of the news stories that we have surrounding the statewide coverage of coronavirus and the pandemic that we're facing. We also have Brandon Smith, our State House reporter, on the phone, and Tom Dzinski, director of epidemiology education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. And we are addressing your questions gleaned from our Indiana Public Broadcasting Station websites and our social media, which you can find at All In Indiana on Facebook and Twitter. Shyle on Twitter asks, I know several people who have been diagnosed by their doctors without a test. Since testing is not readily available, are these cases being reported and counted? It seems like numbers are much lower than they really are. Lauren, are the official test numbers that we have from official tests?
You know, yes. So the numbers that we have are from official tests. I believe based on the guidance from ISDH, the Indiana State Department of Health, that folks who haven't been confirmed as positive are not included in the count on their website. Generally speaking, doctor's offices, individual physicians, if you don't have an underlying health condition, you're not at a higher risk. I believe that the guidance is that if you're able to rule out the common flu, common cold, et cetera, that they're fairly comfortable saying, yes, you have this, so stay home. And then if your symptoms get worse, then they can treat you from there.
And Brandon Smith, on the note that it seems like numbers are much lower than they really are, well, we're talking about official numbers versus actual numbers. And who was it? Was it Dr. Box, our state health commissioner, who even a couple of weeks ago said as much as 1% of the population of Indiana, which is over 65,000 people, may have it right. And that was at 2 weeks ago when she made the announcement.
Yeah, so the state of Ohio had issued that estimate, and we asked Dr. Box 2 weeks ago on the 13th, so nearly 2 weeks ago, if she thought that the same was true of Indiana, and she said likely yes. Obviously, as you just pointed out, that was nearly 2 weeks ago, so things have changed. The number of cases has gone up that we know about. Certainly the number of actual cases that we don't have confirmed has almost certainly gone up as well, and that's because, as has been pointed out, we do not have enough tests. And so what the state is doing is sort of targeted priority testing. So only the people who are the sickest are getting tested, those who have to go to the emergency room because of those severe conditions. We're also, Eli Lilly is also working to test healthcare workers and first responders, folks who are on the front lines of this, to find out if they have it. But yeah, as has been pointed out, a lot of doctors are kind of going, you probably have this. I can't give you a test for sure, but you need to stay home. You need to isolate yourself because you almost certainly have this kind of thing.
Tough position to be in for doctors, certainly. Lauren.
And there are also hospitals all across the state that are working to get ready. So the most recent example is IU Health in Bloomington has set up an outdoor testing tent, essentially, so that folks who are concerned that they have COVID-19, if they have an order from their doctor, are able to go to IU Health Bloomington and get tested.
We have a listener voicemail from Cynthia in Hammond asking about how the stay-at-home order will be enforced. Let's listen.
What is the governor doing to educate local governments in enforcing the essential people to be at work? We have people working across the street on an empty apartment building, rehabbing, that's been empty for years. That doesn't seem essential to me. Thank you.
Brandon, are police getting involved here in any way?
So the state police are working with local police to sort of enforce this. But again, they emphasized, Governor Holcomb said, this is not a hammer approach that they're trying to take. The guidance that was issued by the state police encourages them to, you know, they're not pulling people over on the roadways and asking, are you essential? Are you not? That sort of thing. They're sort of taking this as a case by case situation. Do they think somebody's doing something that isn't essential? Maybe encourage them to follow the guidelines. In the example that voicemail left, though, work that is somewhat outdoors, so for instance, landscaping work, is allowed under the stay-at-home order, not because it's considered essential, but because if you're outside and maintaining the 6-foot social distancing guidelines, generally that's considered okay. So in this example, an empty apartment building doing rehab work, if it's not enclosed or if people are observing the 6-foot guidelines or if they're not more than a few people working on that project, is that considered essential? Maybe not, although providing housing for people might be essential at some point. But if they're observing these other guidelines, then the work is okay, even if it is not deemed essential.
Tom, I have another question from a listener here who asks, have the people that have been in contact with coronavirus patients been contacted? And do we have numbers for how many people have been contacted and instructed to self-isolate?
I know that at least in the initial parts of the pandemic, many health departments and such were doing contact tracing. So once they had a confirmed case via lab test, they would then go back to that individual and find out who they had been in contact with to ask them to quarantine for a minimum of 14 days. I think as more and more cases start to emerge in the population, and the fact that we have community spread and it's considered a pandemic, more focused attention on what we can do to slow this down and less manpower on maybe doing the contact tracing with those individuals. When we have community spread in a pandemic, we're just assuming that everyone is at risk at this point. And if you become ill, stay at home. If you know somebody that's ill, you make sure that they're contacting their physician, help them out as you can, like in a family member situation. But then you yourself are considered exposed and have to wait 14 days as well.
We're talking about what the governor's stay-at-home order means with Tom Dzinski, Director of Epidemiology Education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI, who you just heard. Brandon Smith is joining us via Skype. He's our State House reporter. And Lauren Chapman is our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. And we have another question about PPE in hospitals. Do hospitals in Marion County, this person is probably from Indianapolis, do hospitals in Marion County and in the state have enough PPE? I've heard that hospitals are rationing and do not have enough N95 masks. Lauren, do we know anything about those numbers in that situation?
The numbers are a bit foggy. The Indiana State Department of Health has been intentionally vague about what the supply looks like, though the last update that we received from Commissioner Box was that everybody seems to be okay right now. Mm. It's not a code red, but it's going to get there pretty quickly. And earlier today, the Indiana National Guard was deployed with the Indiana State Police and with the Indiana Department of Transportation at the behest of the Indiana State Department of Health to deliver supplies across the state in almost every single county. To provide more PPE to folks. So that was happening this morning.
Tom, is it responsible or wise to be stingy with PPE? How are these healthcare facilities using these most efficiently?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, if you've ever worn an N95 mask for any length of time, they are not the most comfortable thing in the world to wear. It gets very hot and very uncomfortable as you wear this equipment over time. Now, to be stingy with it, you would say, okay, if you're working with a patient that's infected and you're only seeing infected patients, there, you know, could you keep the same mask on? Ideally, in an ideal situation, you wouldn't do that. You would change personal protective equipment every time, and you should. But if you're only working with infected patients and you know they are infected, could you keep that same mask on for a period of time? Yes, you could. But it gets very uncomfortable. And then every time you take on and off that equipment, you have to wash your hands and then put new equipment on. So it can be done under controlled conditions. It's challenging. It's not the most comfortable thing for our healthcare workers.
We have another voicemail, this one from a listener in Indianapolis, talking about what testing and resources are available to nursing homes. Let's listen.
I have a question regarding nursing home care. When or if is there a plan to have the high-risk people in nursing homes tested? When or if will there be more of a test for the people working in those nursing homes? Just taking their temperature when they walk in to start their shift does not seem enough because you can be symptomatic and not show a fever.
Brandon Smith, we've gotten so many questions about tests, the number of tests, the availability of tests, and who can get them and when and why. Can you help out that listener with that query?
Fundamentally, we do not have enough tests. Indiana's not alone in this. Indiana is not the one responsible for procuring them. That is the federal government's responsibility primarily, and the federal government has, quite frankly, failed. We are getting as many tests as we get, is basically the answer that state officials keep giving us. We don't know how many we're going to get necessarily on any given day. They are getting them as they get them. Obviously, private labs are also doing testing now, and we see some of that in the state. That helps. Those official numbers that we've been talking about throughout the show aren't just from the State Department of Health. Those are also being fed in from private labs that are doing testing as well. They are prioritizing testing for those in the high-risk populations, so at nursing homes, including healthcare workers, which would include folks who work at nursing homes. So they are trying to target those populations that we need to know most, whether or not folks in and around those facilities, folks in and around those populations have it or not. But the reality is, in Indiana and across the country, there simply are not enough tests.
We have a question from a listener who seems to have their heart in the right place. Can hospitals accept community donations? Lauren Chapman, there's good being, people are trying to do good all over, but some people don't know how.
Yeah. So, for example, Wayne Township schools, MSD Wayne Township donated a bunch of protective gear Even today at the Indiana National Guard distribution, it was mentioned to me that the Department of Correction and other manufacturers across the state are shifting production in order to provide personal protective gear. Vincennes University over the weekend donated supplies from their nursing school in order to try and help community hospitals. So there's a lot of things that are happening from a lot of folks who already have personal protective gear. As far as what hospitals need most from us is following the stay at home order and doing that social distancing so that you don't show up and become a bigger problem for them later down the road.
Tom, I have a question here. I'm not sure what this person is referring to, but I'm guessing it's an alternative to the N95 mask. Can P95 and R95 masks be used by healthcare professionals? What are we talking about here?
That's a good question. I've not heard of those masks. N95 is the standard of care in the U.S.
They might be referring to something, perhaps industrial respirators or something like that, which would not do the same thing as an NN95 mask, which is used in the healthcare field.
That would be my guess as well.
And we have another question from a listener that says a friend and family member works at a company where workers were told that because they are a delivery company, employees did not have the option to stay at home. Is this true? Lauren Chapman, does it apply to delivery companies? I know truck drivers are still out on the road because that's necessary.
Yes. According to the Department of Homeland Security, if your job is involved in the logistics of shipping, delivery, foods, medical supplies, any part of that line, there is a decent case for your employer to keep your office open and to keep you working during this time.
We have another listener who says it says people can go outside, which I think is important to mental health. My question is, can people go out fishing as long as they practice social distancing? Lauren Chapman, I think fishing's okay, right?
You know, I came across this question yesterday, in fact, and really have thought a lot about whether or not you can fish and still maintain distance. And I think that you can if you're not fishing in a boat. I actually saw a couple of folks. I was taking photos of closed businesses yesterday and saw a couple of folks right up next to a little branch of the White River that were doing fly fishing off the side. And they were respecting social distancing. They were doing all the right things. They were outside enjoying the nice weather. So, yeah, I mean, as long as you were following the CDC guidelines, you probably should be okay.
I have another listener question who asks, what about the companies that don't produce a product that is necessary to sustain life but are choosing not to close? Many people in management receive laptops to work from home while the actual employees doing the work on the shop floor do not have that option. This is putting mental and psychological stress on them. This can cause the immune system to be compromised. Tom, what about those concerns?
Yeah, those are valid concerns. I'm hoping that businesses that choose to stay open at this time and keeping those employees work. I mean, can they separate people out? My brother owns a small business, and he talked to me about this, that they're trying to stay open and keep their business afloat. And we talked about, well, what can you do to protect people? Well, let's talk about the lunch hour. You know, can we stagger lunch hours so that people can sit farther apart, that they're not all crowded in there at once? What is it out on the shop floor? Is there safe distances between people at when they are working? Can we maximize that distance? Anything you could do to separate people in these situations is going to help reduce the spread of this virus.
We have one more question, and I think that it applies to maintaining our mental health. We have a question from a listener, Lauren, who asks, can I get art supplies?
Oh.
Are art supply stores open right now?
You know, that's an interesting question. I've only heard about Hobby Lobby.
Well, they're being a little defiant, as I understand it.
Yes. Yes. Very much being defiant. I would recommend buying your art supplies online and then having them shipped to you. Yeah.
Lauren Chapman is our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Thank you for coming in, Lauren.
Thanks for having me.
Brandon Smith is our State House reporter at Indiana Public Broadcasting. Thanks as always, Brandon.
Happy to do it.
Tom Dusinski is director of epidemiology education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at IUPUI. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Join us tomorrow for the Friday Pitch-In, where we'll catch up on the week's news and we'll find out how one local restaurant is dealing with the pandemic. Thanks for listening. This is All In.